Welcome to another episode of the Oncology on the Go podcast. I'm your host, Russ Conroy. Dr. Javier Orozco, a neurosurgeon from the University of Aje in Colombia, spoke with Cancer Network about his study titled Signaling Pathways in the Relapse of Glioblastoma, which was published in the journal Oncology. In his study, he and his colleagues identified a variety of signaling pathways and molecular processes that are involved in glioblastoma relapse, including markers like MGMT, microRNA, EGFR, and P53.
What was the rationale for investigating signaling pathways and molecular mechanisms involved in glioblastoma relapse?
Okay, glioblastoma is the most frequent primary malignant tumor of the nervous system. Nowadays, there are many ongoing trials, but the results are in the same way. Little increase in relapse-free survival, but the changes in overall survival are very modest. 20 years ago, we started talking about the STU protocol, chemotherapy plus radiotherapy, and this associated with maximum safe resection. New technologies appear every day to achieve this resection in the surgical field, but the natural history of the tumor is the same. In many cases, the surgeon achieved a complete tumor resection, and finally, a few months after, relapse occurred in almost 100% of the cases. So what are the landscape, what are the escape routes of this tumor, which invariably causes it to reappear in our patients and die? Even that this tumor is not the conventional cancer that go to form metastases to the other parts of the body and consumes the body's economy. This tumor appears and reappears over and over again until finally the neurological damage or intracranial hypertension lead the patient to death. So I feel that knowing these pathways in the era of precision medicine could help us a lot to achieve this goal.
I see. And with that background in mind, how does MGMT play a role in the outcomes for this patient population?
Okay, we can consider MGMT as a DNA repair mechanism. Any factors that generate the formation of alkyl groups in our DNA must be removed to avoid the generation of mutations. And one of our defense mechanisms is this MGMT that removes the alkyl groups of our DNA to repair it. In some occasions, mainly in primary glioblastomas, this enzyme is methylated, is silenced, probably in order to allow damage accumulation in our DNA and perpetuate the damage in the cell. So we take advantage of this characteristic of the tumor to use an alkylating agent like temozolomide. As in this case, in which the enzyme is silenced in the tumor lines, once the chemotherapy deposits its alkyl groups, the tumor is unable to remove it and generate cell death, but in this case, is tumor cells death. This confers a better response to treatment in patients with epigenetic silencing of MGMT.
So that covers MGMT. I know you also took a look at mRNA in your study. Can you tell me a bit about mRNA's potential role as a marker for glioblastoma relapse?
Okay, microRNAs are a class of non-coding RNAs that play important roles in regulating gene expression. Most of studies today have shown that microRNAs bind to a specific sequence of their target mRNA to induce translational repression and mRNA deadenylation and decapitin. Although most studies are focused on how microRNAs inhibit gene expression, some have also reported upregulation of gene expression by microRNAs. If a literature search is carried out on glioblastoma and microRNAs, you can see that in 2007, there were maybe three papers per year. And in 2022, there are 220 per year. The explosion of microRNA as a mechanism of genetic regulation, and glioblastoma is not the exception. In glioblastoma, there are many descriptions, as for example, microRNA 21, 10B, 155, where there are upregulation. And on the other hand, you have other microRNAs with downregulation, such as microRNA 128, 323, for example. Only for mention some specifics, the cases that may involve in reliefs, I can mention microRNA 21 was shown to be highly upregulated and to have anti-apoptotic power in glioblastoma cultures and commercial cell lines. Or, for example, microRNA 181 that is upregulated and is related to reduce the MGMT expressions, and which I late said before is this is predictive of temozolomide responsive. So when we talk about microRNA biomarkers, it is not a single up or down regulation microRNAs. So it's most important to understand the disease-specific microRNA signatures. And in the review we discussed, some of these signatures involved in reliefs through apoptotic alterations, migration, invasion activity. So in this way, the microRNAs play a role in the dynamic transformation of the tumor.
Very detailed breakdown. Thank you. And what role is EGFR thought to play in relapse?
So EGFR is a special case. Amplification of EGFR is a most prevalent aberration in glioblastoma. Abundant, many EGFR deletion mutant has been identified. Some frequent and other relatively rare point mutations in the EGFR extracellular and intracellular domains. EGFRB3, for example, represent the most frequent genetic aberration in brain tumors. And generally, this mutation appear on a background of EGFR amplification. So with EGFR happen, some very special and unique in the landscape of reliefs, where tumors display increased EGFR paired with expression without evidence of EGFR amplification, for example. Of EGFR mutation, but there are EGFR pathway upregulation, suggesting a phenotypic change not captured at the level of copy number of EGFR or mRNA expression. Show us there is an alternative mechanism for increased pathway activity. I mean, there are evidence that support that the EGFR downstream pathway has many factors that are activated with or without EGFR amplification, with or without EGFR mutation. And EGFR pathway is fundamental, is basic in cell proliferation and migration. So if EGFR is a causal factor, it plays a role in gliomagenesis. That's a good reason to find it is amplified sometimes or not in the primary tumor, but always present in recurrence. Is one of the motors of the disease, but unfortunately, although we have target therapies to these mechanisms, such as tyrosine kinase inhibitors or monoclonal antibodies, we don't have the same results that you can see in breast or in lung cancer.
I see. So you covered a couple of the major biomarkers in your study, but you also noted in your study that there are some markers that have substantial theoretical evidence, but discrepancies in clinical studies. What are some examples of these, and are there any plans to investigate these markers with future research?
Yes, I mentioned in the review, for example, when we talk about MGMT, there is a consensus in the studies that show that if the enzyme is silenced, the response to treatment is better and the relapse-free survival is longer. This is clear. However, when we review the literature, this not happen in the same way with P53, for example. We know P53 as the guardian of the genome. It is a protein that works as a checkpoint in the cell cycle. If it's detect that problems in the genetic material, P53 sets in motion different mechanisms to stop the cycle and try to repair the damage. If it repairs, the cell continues its course towards the division of the genetic material. If the damage is irreparable, the cell cannot continue and go to the cell death, mainly by apoptosis. So P53 is perhaps one of the most frequently altered protein in cancer and in glioblastoma too, of course. And we would logically expect that patients with glioblastoma that has a mutation in P53 have a worse disease, of course. However, there are studies that report the opposite. Patients with mutation in P53 with prolonged relapse-free disease. And what is the reason? We could say many things about it. This is definitely a multifactorial phenomenon where not only P53 plays a role, but there are many theories. For example, and is one of the most I want to explain is like an occurs with the MGMT. It's possible that these mechanisms, which initially works in favor of the tumor, the mutation of the P53IC, finally generates high accumulation of mutations until the tumor cell is also non-viable. So it is an example where we have the theoretical knowledge, but the papers have different conclusions between them. P53 is a very good example for this.
P53 definitely sounds like an area for future research based on what you told me. And are there any other findings you'd like to touch on that we haven't covered previously?
Yes, something that maybe not be explicitly writing in the review, but is an obvious conclusion, really. It's about that the relapse is not necessarily the same tumor, the same molecular tumor. The tumor is dynamic, the tumor that initially had MGMT methylation in the relapse maybe not have it. The tumor that did not have EGFR alterations at the relationship maybe have EGFR amplification. Then each moment of the tumor evolution is different and may imply a specific management in the future. And sequential treatment, as usually occurs in the clinical scenario, first line of treatment, second line of treatment, in the unidirectional way, maybe not be the best approximation to the treatment.
Were there any limitations to your study that you feel are worth mentioning?
Yes, of course. The main limitation for this review is the lack of uniformity, the lack of a common language for everyone when studying the tumor in the molecular scenario. For example, the case of MGMT, when you say this tumor does not have MGMT methylation, the first question is, what method you use for the assay? And three main methods will be methylation-specific polymerase chain reaction, PCR, pyrosequencing, both examine the MGMT promoter reaction, and finally, immunohistochemistry, for example. A tumor that does not have methylation in immunochemistry could be due to errors in the operating room, poor sample collection, poor sample preservation, poor antigenic recovery. So the same sample with a different method, for example, PCR, maybe has a different result and did a wrong conclusion. And the literature is full of examples like this. It is a lack of molecular standardization in this file. So the problem, it is not due to scientific ignorance or say something. I think this lack of access to the technologies due to the high cost that this implies. But this lack of standardization is a problem in investigation in general.
Yeah, I see what you mean. And what do you hope your colleagues take away from this conversation?
In the setting of recurrent or progressive glioblastoma, resection or re-biopsy are generally not preferred options by many factors, for example, poor prognosis or functional condition of the patients. So this is a problem to improve because there are few studies examining the manner in which this landscape is altered after treatment in the setting of the therapeutic resistance and in the setting of the relapse. Or selective pressure of the treatment, for example, including the radiotherapy. In this aspect, I mentioned before that this tumor is not only very heterogeneous, but it's a dynamic process. There are many, many driver genes in glioblastoma that are retained in recurrence, but there are other growth of alterations that are new in the relapse. So maybe we can't offer surgery alternatives in many cases of relapse, but we need to explore other alternatives. To don't miss the opportunity to do molecular dissection of this tumor. I don't know how, maybe liquid biopsies, cell-free DNA, circulating tumor cells. I don't know. That important is don't miss the opportunity to do this molecularization in the relapse background. And maybe the second message, is related to the limitation. To take away, we will do an effort to have the same form to talk in the molecular scenario to obtain the correct and reproducible conclusions.
Great. Thank you very much for your answers. Those were all the questions that I had for you. Was there anything else that you wanted to bring up that we didn't bring up previously?
No, it's okay for me.
In that case, thank you again for taking the time to talk to me. I do appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. Don't forget to subscribe to the Oncology On The Go podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere podcasts are available, or listen online at cancernetwork.com/resources/podcasts. The Oncology On The Go podcast is the official podcast of cancernetwork.com, the home of the journal Oncology. For more information, visit us at cancernetwork.com and find us at Twitter at cancernetwork without the O, or on Facebook and LinkedIn at cancer-network.